All right, welcome to this episode of the Overcomers podcast. This wasn't really a planned one when we kind of looked at the season, but my friend Josh Turner was in town working with churches and church planners and pastors. And I love Josh for a variety of reasons that I won't share on camera. But the one I will share on camera is I had this moment in the early years of the Village Church where we were all 20-somethings, and I didn't do a funeral for a 70-year-old who had lived faithfully until I had been at the church for close to 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And so all the funerals I were doing were children or 24-year-olds that went fishing and didn't come home and left a wife and a baby.
Yep.
And I went to Children's down in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman named Dottie Pons, still at the church, to pray for her grandson, Bryce, who was born with this genetic disorder that basically was like, he's not long for this earth.
Yep.
Which is funny because I was just back down in Children's praying for Bryce, who's now 19 because of complications on his like 50th surgery or whatever it is. And I hugged Dottie, and Dottie just sobbed in my chest. And it occurred to me that she didn't have any category for this.
Yeah.
And not that in a moment like that you need categories.
Yeah.
But I had kind of committed in my heart, I am going to prepare us for the brokenness of this world.
Yeah.
And so I spent, if you go back and listen to early Village stuff, I am always saying things like, nobody in this room, the whole trajectory of your life could change with your phone ringing right now. And then just tried to find everywhere in the Bible that it went bad and just highlight it.
I think that's when I found you as a preacher.
Yeah, maybe you did.
Maybe you did.
I mean, I was just like, hey, John the Baptist asked Jesus, are you the one or should I expect another?
And Jesus basically said, no, you're going to die in prison.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Like, tell him what you see.
And you're going
to die. Quotes Isaiah.
Yep.
Leaves off and the prisoners will go free. He literally says to John, I am the one and you're going to die in prison. But nobody was saying that.
Nobody.
So I wanted to point it out. I wanted to point out Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Who's like, wait, you seduced me. You tricked me. I'm doing what you tell me to do. I'm getting beat up, got my clothes beat off of me and left dead in a ditch.
Yeah.
Where's your victory? Where's your, right? I just wanted to highlight all that and
sense?
Go, this might be normal life in a way that nobody wants to talk about. And so Josh, we don't do book stuff.
Yeah.
And Josh has a new book out, Into the Storm. I'll just hold it up for the camera since we don't do this. I'm guessing this is what I'm supposed to do. But you do have a story of suffering and suffering well, and then a willingness to enter into now the suffering of others in a real way with both the gospel and with help that you need to kind of be sustained in that. So, hey, welcome to the Overcomers podcast.
No, thanks for having me. This is awesome. I mean, when you and I first met, you were preaching at church, and it was funny because I told my wife, my wife has known how much I've looked up to you as a communicator and a preacher for years, you know, being in ministry for so long, but you helped me wrestle with suffering in such a way that was so different than where I kind of came from and the tribe that I had been from. And so, my wife was like, I remember driving to church to meet you and talk to you. My wife's like, are you nervous? And I was like, I think so. Because it's one of those things too, like, you know the story, like, don't ever meet your heroes.
Yeah.
And so there was one of those things where when you and I met, we immediately kind of hit it off. I was like, oh, I genuinely like this guy and think we could like get into some trouble together.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
And so, it's really cool being here. It means a lot.
Man, I'm glad you're here. So what's funny, I'm such a fiery preacher, but like off stage, I'm like a human golden retriever. I'm just like, throw the ball, you know? And so I think people are like, oh man, that's intense. And then, I mean, I guess I do have some intensity to me, but
a little bit.
I'm like a human golden retriever.
Funny? Because I would make my wife listen to so many of your sermons. And she's like,
she hates me.
She goes, that guy is intense. And I go, but don't you love it? She's like, I don't know.
I mean, why is he, I have to keep messing with the volume. Can't they compress that or something?
Just get in there, man. Stay in the pocket. You know what I mean?
I can't. I wish I could. Actually, I don't. I don't want to.
So, yeah. But what's really cool too is like my son's 22 and he loves you.
Oh, man.
As a preacher. Like, and when we stay at home and don't go to church on a Sunday, I know that we're like backslidden, and we watch you, he's like, I get more out. You said something in one of your sermons recently, and he came downstairs. He goes, so I've been researching what Matt said. And I was like, what? I go, you're reading your Bible upstairs by yourself? He goes, yeah, he just said something that really struck me. And I'm like, praise God for Matt Chandler, dude.
Okay, come on.
Because I've raised him for 22 years, and I can't get that joker to read the Bible at all. But you—
It's not true. You know it's not true, but thank you.
You say one thing, and he's like, oh, the word of God comes alive.
Hey, so on that, and then I want to get into some of this. My, you know, one of the things I've said for, I think, for 20 years is, you know, find the things that stir your affections, fill your life with them.
Yep.
Whatever robs you of that affection, be morally neutral. Yep. You need to lessen that or cut it out altogether. So then Audrey, my oldest, she was going through premarital counseling. She comes home one night. She's like, oh my gosh, Dad, listen, have you ever heard of this? Like tonight, Aaron was saying like a real kind of legitimate path of sanctification is like find the things that like stir my affection for Jesus.
You're like, wow, that's crazy.
And then anything that is keeping that affection from growing, like get it out of my life or at least lessen its influence in my life. And in my head, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's so
crazy.
But what I've
never
heard that before.
I was like, that really is amazing.
That is unbelievable.
That's incredible.
Thank God for
Aaron.
So
that's just a kid thing, man. It's just a kid thing.
It is.
Like, yeah, you've heard me say that since you were born. But no, it's dad. It's dad talking.
Yep.
So you said you came from a tribe that was kind of different, or let's say maybe did not prepare you.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
For kind of an experience that we'll get into.
Yeah.
So talk a little about kind of what you grew up in and like not the shadow of
the
gold in it.
Yeah, I mean, the gold in it was, it really built my faith. Like I got saved in, you know, that church that I came from and came up in it, and it really built a deep faith in me. But then when you walk through what we walked through with our special needs daughter, you then start realizing, okay, what people sometimes say from platforms just sounds good and is not always—
when it slams into life.
Yes. It's not 100% biblically accurate.
Yeah.
So then it just sent me on this path of like, what is suffering in the Bible?
Yeah.
You know, and we all want to preach, name it, claim it, believe it, God's going to come through. And yeah, he's going to come through. It may just not happen on this side of eternity.
Yeah.
And I had to reconcile all of that.
Yeah.
And so I started actually interviewing pastors, and I would sit with them and go, okay, I go, I have a severely special needs child. She's the 12th known case in the world. Did God cause it or allow it? I go, I can go Psalms 139.
Yeah.
God made her this way. I can go Romans 8:28. God's going to work it together for good. And what I started realizing was I was getting answers based off of everybody's different theological slant from the tribe or the network they were in or whatever. And I became such a head case in it for about 6 years, like really, really deep theological, doctrinal, whatever, that I could argue myself.
Yeah.
Like you would say something, I'd be like, well, what about this scripture? Tell me more about this one. And yeah, so I had to really reconcile theologically, where is God in suffering?
Yeah.
And how does he work? And it was a journey, dude.
Yeah.
Massively.
So let's talk Riley, who, what a beautiful soul.
She's awesome.
I mean, what a beautiful soul, you know, just the few times that I've gotten to see. I mean, just, you can tell the Lord's
the
honor,
yeah,
like optimistic, bright-eyed.
Well, now she's starting to preach places. People are asking her to come and preach to their youth ministries and their kids' ministries. So you can't tell her anything anymore, bro. She's big time. I'm just carrying her bags.
Just, I want that autograph.
She should have just signed this book.
Oh, it'd be worth more. It'd be worth more.
It's not worth—
So you and your wife find out you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Riley's number two.
Number two. We had two miscarriages between her and my son.
Okay.
And between Riley and my son. And so total normal pregnancy. We go into the hospital and they pull her out. You know, as a dad, when you're there's a C-section, you're nervous as all get out anyway. So they like pull her out like Simba from The Lion King, and they like resuscitate her in the room.
Okay.
And I know something's wrong, because I can see everything that's happening. My wife really is, you know, she's whatever. She said she wasn't drugged up. I'm like, girl, you had a C-section. You're drugged up. And so
they don't tend to do that all natural.
No,
anymore.
No, it's not. It's,
yeah, I just think like, bite down on this stick.
I think they call that frowned upon in medical practice. And so the doctor comes and gets me, and he's like, hey, Mr. Turner, we need to talk to you. They take me out, And dude, I'll never forget, they take me into a broom closet.
Okay.
Like right around, and because I remember standing in there going, y'all should really have better rooms for stuff like this.
Yeah.
It was at a new hospital and they said, hey, we've called an ambulance. We don't know what's wrong with your daughter and we don't know if she's going to make the ambulance ride.
Okay.
So I walk in and I said, well, can I see her? And she's got IVs in her head, both hands, both feet, and like she's hooked up to the umbilical cord.
Okay.
And I remember saying to the nurses, I go, hey, this may get weird for some of y'all, but I'm about to throw down in prayer really loud.
Yeah.
And dude, I went ham.
Yeah.
Like just, and then the ambulance comes and gets her and takes her to the NICU. My wife was out of the hospital in less than 24 hours after a C-section.
Yeah.
You couldn't have chained her to that bed. And then Riley spent 3 months in the NICU.
Okay. And what was the diagnosis?
She was not diagnosed until she was 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
So we were there. We mapped out her entire genetic sequence. They put, at 1 month in, they put a trach in, G-tube. She originally had what's called a GJ tube, so we had to feed her into her lower intestine and all this sort of stuff. And I'll never forget, I was standing at the end of her NICU bed, and the doctor comes up to me and goes, hey, he goes, so I've done $1 million worth of testing on your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Everything comes back normal. He goes, you may get this thing named after you, which also made me want to fight him in the parking lot. So she was undiagnosed for 12 years.
That is wild.
And it was just, I mean, literally they just sent us home with her and they're like, just try to keep her healthy. And no one knew anything. And so at 12 in 2017, new genetic testing came out. She had one doctor that was a specialist in Orlando and he randomly, studying a genetic abnormality. And he looked at my wife and goes, I think this is what your daughter has. We tested her for it. She was the 12th known case in the world. So, yep, that's where we're at.
Yeah.
12th known case.
And then now we're in a series of surgeries to keep her
so
alive.
So we've had about 33 surgeries with her. She had the massive one is she has a full spinal fusion that took 12 hours. Riley, everything with her, she's mentally totally normal. Everything's physical. So it would present almost like a muscular dystrophy. Like, so she can't really do anything on her own that much, like lifting stuff, moving stuff. She's in wheelchairs that she destroys our house with. Dude, she'll get loose in turn three, like at Talladega. I'm like, slow down, girl. Like, golly. And so we've had a ton of surgeries. We spoke sign language for the first 7 years.
Okay.
And the doctors told us she would never speak. And legitimately, I was writing a sermon. She's laying on the floor. It was Columbus Day, playing PlayStation 4 with her brother. Starts talking. Never went back to sign language.
Okay.
And I remember, I don't know how you are with this, but I don't have a problem believing God does miracles. I sometimes have a problem believing he'll do them for me or my children.
That's most people.
Yeah. And so, bro, she started talking. I have it on video.
Come on.
And now she's 17 and I have to remind myself it's a gift that she talks.
Yeah.
Because it is like, just, can we just sit in silence for a little bit?
No.
No, we can't. No.
But I think that's probably better than kind of the teenage girl that kind of stops talking and goes quiet. So maybe it's a blessing.
Yeah, it is.
Stream of consciousness.
It's awesome. What was funny is like when we do sign language, she had all these little signs that we thought we knew what she was doing. And then when she started talking, she's like, no, I was saying booyah.
No, this means this.
This is what this means. And we're like, oh, cool, cool, cool. Like, cool.
We thought you wanted a drink.
That's why I was forcing that soda on you all the time.
Okay. So you're walking through Riley. You're working at this church. Yep. You're bit on a theological journey. Is it causing pressure where you were?
It was causing pressure within me.
Okay.
And so, you know, I kind of come from a little bit more of a charismatic background, not like flags and tambourines, but you know what I mean? Like, so.
Was it if you just have enough faith, this is going to end
up
away?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little, like it was a non-denominational deal. So, you know, kind of stir you into a frenzy, have enough faith, whatever. And it was really good until it didn't work.
Yeah.
And so then I'm a pastor and I can't preach what I don't believe.
Yeah.
Like I can't like, So I'm preaching and we're doing prayer services and healing services. And my pastor, I don't know if he did this for me. I don't know if he was just oblivious. He'd be like, hey, I need you to go pray for the congregation for healing while my kid is in a NICU.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't even know what I believe about this.
Yeah.
I don't even know how I believe God works in this stuff. And so it caused more pressure in me of what do I actually believe with a purity that I can say into a microphone or to someone in a cancer bed or, you know, whatever. And so that was my journey for it, really. And I really wrestled with all that for really like 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Most Christians I know, they have this deep longing to understand the Bible more deeply and in ways that move their souls, like to greater worship and gladness. In fact, I feel like I'm in those conversations all the time when it comes to the Bible, like men and women who love God, they go to church. Most of them even start the day by reading their Bible, and yet they still have this hunger to know God's word more deeply in its context and meaning and in a way that really is transforming their lives. And that's why I'm excited to tell you about Kava. It comes from the Hebrew word Kava, which means to wait on or to hope in the Lord. Kava is a Christian streaming platform that really was built to help you understand the Bible and live out your faith with confidence. Think of it as digital discipleship in your pocket. It has Bible studies, documentaries, and there are these conversations led by trusted teachers that help scripture finally come alive in your everyday life. And another reason why this is one of those I really love is that Kava is a nonprofit subscriber-funded ministry, which means when you subscribe, you're not just getting the benefit, but you're partnering with them in creating biblical content that helps people all over the world go deeper in their faith. So this is one of those, like Kava gives you the opportunity to grow with thousands of others who are finding greater confidence in God's word. So you can visit kava.tv/theovercomer. That's kava.tv/theovercomers. And use code OVERCOMER50 for 50% off your first 6 months. Again, that's kava.tv/theovercomers, code OVERCOMER50. And so you're in this thing with Riley, and then things at the church do begin to kind of unravel in some ways?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because I told you, I'm trying to figure out so bad causation allowance.
Yeah.
That was my predestination, foreknowledge, all this sort of stuff, right? I'm just a head case with it. And I would go into other pastors on staff. I mean, I was super young. I mean, we had her at 27. So I'm still trying to figure out who I am as a man, what I believe, like all this sort of stuff. And it was when you had brain cancer.
Yeah. 09.
09. And so I am a disaster theologically, because I'm trying to get a black and white answer, which just sends you down like a crazy town.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, I had started listening to you and I was like, okay, there's something this dude's saying that I haven't heard.
Yeah.
Because I don't come from that background. And you filmed the video to your church that was basically like, this may be the last video I send you. And I'll never forget, you said, everybody's asking me, did God cause this or allow this? And you said, and my Reformed brothers are going to hate that I say this. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, that gave me some sort of weird freedom to embrace the mystery of what God does.
Yeah.
And that my job is not to say, did God cause this or allow this? My job is to say, God, what do you want me to do with this? And that, I mean, you were a massive, and I know that's why you brought me on here to talk about how great you are.
That's the deal. Everybody has to sign that before they come on. You got to mention me. Every time you mention me, you get a little bit more money.
Yeah. I get like a nickel this time. But it gave me, I mean, it really did. It gave me a ton of freedom not be okay.
Yeah.
And to go, maybe God is doing something I don't understand. And I shouldn't understand it.
Yeah.
Or I can't.
Yeah. My thing always was like, certainly I might not be able to handle intellectually or mentally in this limited human form.
For sure.
Like certainly, I've always loved Augustine's kind of like life in this world's like having your face pressed against a stained glass window.
Yep.
Like you just can't get far enough back to see it. So you're going to see broken edges. It's not going to look beautiful at times. But the Christian, the call on the Christian is to believe, no, when put in the framework of
everything,
human existence, this picture's beautiful.
Yep.
But man.
It's brutal. It's a brutal journey. I mean, I have a friend that you and I've talked about him. He's an Anglican priest. He's a theologian. He goes, you know what your daughter did, what God did through your daughter to you? He goes, he did a good that wounded you to push you to healing.
Mm.
And I was like, where were you 17 years ago?
Where were you, buddy? He's finishing his PhDs.
Multiple. We get it. You're impressive. Yeah. So yeah, it was a massive journey.
All right. And still on it.
Oh yeah. Still in it, dude.
Still on it. And she is, you know, I said it at the beginning.
Just she's awesome.
Bright eyed.
Oh yeah.
Down. Wants to play.
She makes
wants to go.
Feel like I'm not a Christian.
Yeah.
I was praying for her one night. It's a weird thing praying for healing for your special needs child because you don't want them to feel like anything's wrong with them. But you also want to build their faith.
Yeah.
So one night I was like wrestling with all this and I go, you know what? I'm just going to pray for her. And I go into her room and I kneel next to her bed and I put my hands on her. I go, hey, Raya, I go, I'm going to pray for you and we're going to pray that God heals you. So I start praying for her. She goes, stop. I go, what? She goes, stop praying for me. She goes, God knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He didn't make any mistakes. And I was like, I got nothing. I was like, Becca, like, can you?
I'm
like,
sorry. Let me ooch out of here.
My bad.
The Lord smites me.
Let me get your AirPods for you. All right. See you in the morning. Just like, I don't know. That's just her. And then we were having, my family and I recently, we stayed up randomly to like 2 a.m. one morning. And we were talking about theology with my kids. And I mean, sometimes we're just watching Braves baseball, but other than this one night, we're talking theology. And my son, he's very cerebral, and he's processing stuff out loud. And he's talking about how he gets angry at God sometimes. And Riley just goes, you know what, though, guys? I'm happy that I even get the opportunity to be mad at God. And I'm like, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want to come over.
No, don't.
She'll I don't want to come over, man. I don't want to come over. I'm
just
good.
Like, I just walked out of the kitchen. I was like, I'm going to bed.
Going to bed at 2.
Yeah,
I've got to recover from that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Man, I love her story and would love to see God heal her.
Yeah, same.
But I'm not going to pray that in earshot of her.
No.
And I'll pray that in my closet.
Yeah.
My prayer closet.
And here's whatever God is doing. He's not surprised or shocked by it.
Mm-hmm.
Riley didn't catch him off guard.
No. Nope.
And would I have chosen this life? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Is there good in it? Yes. Is it insanely hard? 100%.
Yeah.
I've handed my kid off 33 times to surgeons.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
No, yeah. I've done it once and I was like, I'm not okay.
Oh.
So now tell me about kind of the work you're doing now. I love 1010 stuff.
Yeah.
Like love the idea of helping guys in ministry finish well, which, I mean, if you've got social media, you know, that not a lot seem to be doing it. I think it's unfair. I think a ton of guys finish well.
We
and then
don't
some
know them.
High profile guys blow
crash
up.
And burn.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk a little bit about
10-10. Yeah, so 10-10 comes from Ecclesiastes 10-10. You know, it says a dull axe requires more work, so use wisdom, sharpen the blade. So I've been a pastor for over 20 years, and just like you, I've lost a lot of friends in ministry. I mean, you and I were talking about our friend Darren Patrick.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to Darren in the morning. He took his life and would have had no idea. So I started looking around at what was offered for pastors. Like, is there a program that helps them stay healthy? And you found really one of two things. You found trips that were just 3 to 5 days away, mm-hmm. which I call relief. And I say relief isn't bad, but relief is like a drug for a drug addict. Like what once worked doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
And so there was nothing dealing with the underlying issues, or you find a thing that is just after they've already gone off the rails in restoration. So we say 10-10 is actually a prehab, like we're helping guys stay healthy. So we take guys through a year-long process of mental, emotional, and spiritual health that is based off of 15 years of research with Biola University.
Okay.
And so it is really a very heavy mix of mental health and spiritual formation.
Okay.
But we do it around really cool trips.
And I think that's the number of guys I know that like got into this early, they were just given way too much way too soon. I think I was one of those guys. Oh, yeah. Like, man, within a year of being a Christian, I was teaching.
Oh, yeah, same. 2 years. I was a pastor on staff. I didn't even know what I believed.
Just felt like they threw me in the deep end, and I happened to survive it.
Yep.
And then, man, I did not have... Now, by the grace of God, like the story of my life is at the right time, God sent the right man to father me would be the only word I have for it, to encourage or point out or walk alongside or confront or... and I look back on my life. I've done that kind of turning point exercise. What are the key moments where everything in my life, and it's littered with the right man at the right time that really is why I'm sitting in this chair
for sure,
and not probably making a lot more money in the business world, but not fulfilling the call that God placed on my life. And, so I love stuff like this. Yeah. Wish I had more room and space in my life to participate in. I mean, I'm always coaching three or four guys, but some of those guys on my staff, and then some of those guys in different parts outside of the world. But man, as many guys that we can get who are obviously gifted, because that's what ends up happening.
Yeah.
Oh, this guy's gifted. We don't know anything about his character. We don't know anything about his compulsions. Yeah. We don't know anything about...
Well, and
he probably doesn't even know about
that's him. What I was going to say is like one of the things the research shows, which was, I don't know if this is just men in general or specifically, I mean, this was, the research was on specifically pastors, but I think this is men, that pastors are massively unaware of their own emotions.
Yeah.
And so what we've seen with all the guys we've taken through is like, they actually, we have to help them discover what is actually going on inside of you. Like, what are you feeling? What are you wrestling with? Whatever. And man, it's a process. Like, it takes time to drill down to get in there.
Super disorienting. Oh. And I would say the most courageous thing I've ever done in my life was lean into that season.
Yep.
And you know, it was funny and can be harder for pastors is, so like the lie, and like Lauren interviewed me for my own podcast and we talked about this journey, but the lie underneath everything in my life was that I am useful, but not necessarily lovable.
Yeah.
And so what was hard for me, even in the healing process, was everybody celebrated that in me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, man, that Matt Chandler can work.
Oh, yeah,
dude. I mean, he can get stuff done. How does he, I love, like, how do you do all this? Yeah. Like, you're writing books, you're leading a network, you're pastoring a church, you look like you're loving your wife and your kids well. How are you, like, I love, I fueled.
Oh, yeah, dude. It becomes part of your identity.
Yeah.
It becomes what you're known for. And I think, I remember when you and I've talked a little bit, like I was at one church for 17 years. It did not end well. Thankfully, I didn't do anything. My former pastor made some poor decisions. And I remember leaving after 17 years and I looked at my wife and I go, I don't know who I am anymore.
Yeah.
My father-in-law asked me this one time. He goes, what did you learn most through that season? I said, I'm a really good servant of God. I don't know how to be a son.
Yeah.
And it took me 3 to 4 years, man. Like therapy, spiritual direction, to really walk through and go, what does it mean to be a son of God if I'm not pastoring a church and I can't serve him in that way?
Yeah.
And what we see with guys so many times is that's going on inside of them, and they are servants before they are sons.
Yeah.
And that's a dangerous road.
Man, it really is.
It is. It'll get you.
Was hard for me, Josh, is like that discombobulation happened while I was pastoring.
Oh yeah.
And then I was like, what do I quit?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do I like really heal here? Yeah. I don't feel like I should quit, but is that hero Matt talking right now?
Yep.
Is that what version of me is whispering into my soul right now? Is that the Holy Spirit? Is that the what? So my discombobulation probably lasted a year and a half after my first intensive, where I was like, who's driving the car right now?
Yep.
Like, is it the Lord? Is it me?
Yep. Is it the 14-year-old version of me?
Yeah. Is it 9-year-old Matt who's raging?
Yeah.
Is it 12-year-old Matt who just wants someone to acknowledge that he has value?
Yep.
Is it like who's driving
this
car? Who's in
control of us? Yep.
And so, and that's why I said the work itself is the most courageous thing, because man, you got to look into some ugly things, and the ugly things are you.
Oh yeah. And that's why, I mean, for us, we hired therapists. So we've got five therapists that work for us. And the middle trip we do with all our guys is a counseling intensive, because to tell a pastor over, hey, you're not a therapist.
Yeah.
You may know the Bible, but you're not a therapist.
Yeah.
So we brought in therapists, and man, I've just seen so many things come out in these therapy sessions that some are really good. And some of them, you have to look at the pastor and go, hey man, we need to have a side conversation and handle some stuff.
Yeah.
Like, cause you're on a pathway that is, that you can see, like, it's the train track that ends and the train's still rolling.
Yeah.
And you're like, we got to deal with some stuff, man.
Yeah.
And, but it is a discombobulating thing. But like, again, I referenced my friend that said, sometimes the Lord will do a good that wounds you to push you to healing.
Yeah.
Man, you got to walk through that stuff.
And I try to tell guys, it never lands like I want, but like, this job is not better than Jesus.
No.
This is just not better than Jesus. In fact, I don't even want to do this if I don't get him in his fullness and like get to walk in his presence and hear his voice and hear, like, I'm no thank you.
No.
No, no. Let me go build something else. Let me go do something else.
Yeah, we could do other jobs that are a lot less stressful than this.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
For sure you can.
So.
So I love the idea, the concept.
Yeah.
How long is the program?
It's like a year long.
Okay.
So it's 12
months.
12 months, three trips. We do really cool trips like snowmobiling, shooting hogs out of helicopters.
I'm down.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. And then monthly coaching. So it's a cohort model, anywhere from 8 to 10 guys in a cohort with a coach that walks with them through the entire year. We have content videos they watch that we film, me interviewing theologians, me interviewing therapists, the head of psychology. And then we wrote two field guides, that each field guide's 150 pages that are different exercises. Some are just weekly, some are daily, that we are trying to help them do, that is based off of research of, like, if you do these things, it'll help you stay healthy in ministry. And it's very relational.
It's got to be.
And we made the content is, do these and figure out what works for you.
Yeah.
Like, what spiritual disciplines, what spiritual practices, when you do them, helps you feel like you are closer to the Lord.
Yeah.
And walking with him. And so it's awesome.
So you said something there I'd love for you to unpack. I know what you mean. I'd just love to talk about it. You used the word feel.
Yep.
You could probably take out the word feel and put in the word experience.
Yep.
And I have found a lot of passion around both of those words, where both are minimized and then replaced with kind of like what I would call like kind of the quick fix of just like, why don't you just read the Bible? Yeah. Why can't you just?
Yeah. So, you know, we all know the scripture, especially pastors know it. Don't trust your heart because it's deceitful and wicked above all else. Yeah. Right. So when we do therapy or we teach guys how to recognize what's going on inside of you, they're like, well, the Bible tells me I don't trust my feelings. I don't trust whatever. So that's why we brought in a theologian. And the thing that my buddy does that is so gangster, he'll go, yeah, that's not what that says.
Yeah.
He says, what that says is your heart is deceitful and wicked above all else. He goes, but when you read it in the Hebrew, it translates to your heart is treacherous.
Yeah.
He said, treacherous does not mean evil or wicked. It means it's hard to navigate.
Yeah.
So you need to navigate it with wise counsel and with the Lord. He said, so we're going to take you through a process to help you navigate your heart, your emotions, your feelings. Why would God say our heart is deceitful and wicked above all else, but then to guard it at the same time?
Yeah.
And so what most people we have to understand is what God is always trying to get at is the deep places of our heart and who we are. And what we help guys try to understand is, man, there are really three ways to get to the deep part of your heart: deep study, deep prayer, and deep sorrow.
Yeah.
And most guys, when it comes to the deep sorrow part, they just want to lock it away.
Yeah.
Or they want to hide behind their theology, or they want to hide behind the Bible. And sometimes a pastor just needs someone to go, hey, bro, don't do that.
Yeah, bro, I was so armored up with the Bible.
Yeah.
So armored up. And
we've been conditioned as pastors, and you know this, as a communicator, we have a little bit of us has been communicated or conditioned to go, how do I use this for somebody else? And to sit with a group of type A leaders who are leading large churches and go, hey, we need you to figure out how to use this for you.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on inside of you?
I have a great story. There was a guy, Scotty Ward Smith.
Okay. I know that name. I can't.
So he used to write for the Gospel Coalition, but he would just write prayers.
Yep.
And he came to an Acts 29 event here in Dallas, and he shared his story.
Yep.
And his story, I'm going to, if I do this, if I don't tell this correctly, I'm sorry, Scotty, just email me. But he told a story that, you know, planted this church in Nashville, blowing and going,
yep.
big deal, getting a little bit of swagger. And I believe it was like on the drive home one day, you know, he was wanting some compliments from his wife. And his wife said, I found myself in your sermon wondering what it would be like to live with that man that preached today instead of the man I'm living with.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a by the grace of God wake-up call.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be.
No.
I mean, could have just been a huge fight.
Oh.
But it was a wake-up call. So, you know, went to his elders and decided to get help. So took a bit of a sabbatical, went and got help.
Yep.
First sermon back.
Yep.
He had new language. He was using new language. And he said, one of his elders, like, it's like, hey, let me walk you out to your car.
Yeah.
And basically said, if you ever do that again, I'll beat your ass. Oh. And he was like, what do you mean? He was like, you just used the help that you were meant to receive
for everybody
for a
else.
Sermon.
Yep.
And there's no way you have absorbed that in a way that it's helping you.
Oh yeah.
And so you're doing the very thing again that, and then that was for him, that was like,
we're really good at co-opting the language of healing.
Yeah.
And I like, there was a dude, this was literally like a month ago. There was a pastor who was having a hard time. I sent him to a counseling intensive and I'm not on his board, none of that, but I got called into it. Sent him to this counseling intensive. I see him a week after his counseling intensive. Posting on Instagram, hey, I had an encounter with the Lord. If you need prayer, DM me.
Spiritual bypass.
And I'm like, I called him. I'm like, I will fight you in the streets. Like, what? Like, dude, just let it be for you.
Yeah.
And I think that it's hard to sit with pain. And we don't like it. So we end up doing all these things to get out of pain, out of hurt, out of suffering. Scripturally, I think that you can argue majority that is where the Lord does the deepest work.
Yeah.
And as pastors, I think we are trained. And here, the other thing for me with a lot of pastors is they have no theology of suffering.
Yeah.
And so when you encounter suffering in your own world, it then begins.
And you're going to.
Yes. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
No way out.
Read the Bible.
No way. Like, no. Like, yeah. He's like, not sparing. No. If the disciple that Jesus loved was boiled alive and didn't die and got exiled to Patmos, you should probably expect.
You're not the guy that God's like, that's the one, Jesus. Yeah, we're not nothing. He's going to get it good. Yeah. We're conditioned to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder at times, what would it look like to kind of sit in it, not as like a woe is me, Debbie Downer, whatever, but to allow the Lord to do the work in you that he is trying to do for you.
Yeah.
Because we all love Romans 8:28, right? God works all together for good with those who love him and called according to his purpose. But the whole thing is he's doing all of that to make us be more in the image of his son, Christ. So it's like suffering is the thing that I think biblically we see that God uses the most to conform us to the image of Jesus. Yeah. And as pastors, we so much want to preach the inspiring messages and stir people into a frenzy at times. But at the end of the day, man, I think our responsibility is to walk through suffering and to point to Jesus and to help people be able to do that in their worst moments.
That's right. That's right. And I know not everybody who's listening to this is pastors, but I think this is...
It's everybody.
It's everybody. Yeah. And pastors are a picture of the moment we're in.
For sure.
And it's unfortunate because they're meant to be our guides.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we all want Jesus to be our life coach.
Yeah.
And man, that just doesn't, when you really walk through deep suffering, just as a person, you have to reconcile who God is.
Yeah.
And I always try to tell people, man, God is not tied up in your circumstance. Mm-mm. God is tied up on the cross of Calvary. And like that is, if we can help people get there on the worst day of their life, they can say, this is terrible and I hate it.
Yeah.
But God is really good.
Yeah.
And we, and our family, we have to do that over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. It is I wish, and I'm curious at how it'll play out, but I wish with all the kind of renewal, revival mm-hmm. stuff that we're talking about, that preaching and teaching on like a theology of life in a fallen world and what you can expect.
Yeah.
I wish more brothers would do it from the pulpit, man. And what I learned, you know, I'm pastoring a church full of 20 somethings and leaning in, and then we didn't have a lot of people roll out and lose their faith. Yeah. In fact, this whole podcast has been interviewing people that lost a child, that found out their wife was sleeping with their best friend, that, you know, their drunkenness finally caught up to them and they lost everything. And the testimony is, and I always want it a little bit more raw. I'm not necessarily interested in you lost a kid 25 years ago. I want to talk to you at five when you hadn't theologized your pain away. Yep. And we gave them bearings for how hard life can be.
Yep.
And the church grew. It was like, because everyone resonates with it.
Everybody's trying to make sense of it.
Everybody resonates with it. And I don't know why we avoid it to do a pep rally.
I mean, honestly, like what was so unique for me during COVID, it was the first time I wasn't pastoring.
Yeah.
Like my own church in a really long time. And so I'm helping pastors and talking through. I remember telling my wife, I go, oh, these guys don't have a theology of suffering.
Yeah.
So now they're trying to lead their churches in a moment which none of us were prepared for. No. And they don't have a theology. They don't know what they're doing. And so I think part of it is like they just don't know. And I think, I say it this way, I think that there is a grace that God gives us when we need it.
Yeah.
Right? Like we all look at people's lives.
Not and go, before.
Yeah. I would never be able to do that. Well, no, you haven't been given the grace for that yet. And I think that's the time that God gives it to you. And I think there's some people that, you know, they won't walk through some of the things I've walked through in life and church hurts and special needs kids and all that. And I think that's the grace of God.
Yeah.
And I think God in his sovereignty and in his goodness looks at people and goes, I can trust them.
Yeah.
I can trust them with suffering.
Yeah.
And my family and I, we say this all the time, and I don't say this like, you know, fatalist or whatever. I think part of my family's calling is to suffer and to point to Jesus.
Come on.
And I think that's what we're called to. And I don't mean that in like a womp womp, you know what I mean, sort of way, but I really do mean it in a, for whatever reason, and maybe this is the way I just make sense of it to myself, is God going, I can trust them in this pain that they will continue to point to me. And I feel like I could learn a lot from the Lord by winning the lottery.
Yeah.
You know, but
that's my personal preference would be make me a billionaire and I will fund your kingdom.
I will serve you so well.
We'll have a foundation.
And I think the Lord's like, no, you won't.
Actually,
you'll be in Cabo. You know what I mean?
Like, you can serve the Lord from Cabo for the record. For the record.
Yeah. And so I think that's part of our family's calling, man.
Yeah.
Is to really walk through storms, situations, and go, man, we wouldn't have chosen this.
Yeah.
We don't like this, but man, he's still really good.
Yeah, I have a friend who has a special needs son who's now in his 20s.
Yeah.
You know, big old boy.
Yep.
Prone to violence.
Yep.
And he said, the gift that Darren's been is he keeps us in second gear.
Oh. Yeah.
Like life is slow.
Yep.
Not easy, but slow because we can't move fast. And now that, you know, his other kids are grown, he's just like, it's just been a gift to see the Lord's going, I'm going to let your life move at a pace where you're going to be more deeply aware of me.
Yep.
You're going to understand what's really important and what's not.
Yep.
And give you lenses by which you can see other people. Empathy and compassion in a way that you would have never had.
Oh, dude.
Had you not walked in
this. Yeah, I mean, it broke me.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, in a way, and I mean, I realized how many Christian band-aids we put on things of people that are suffering. I mean, I remember we'd be in the hospital and people would be like, hey, man, praying for you. I'm like, cool, pray for me right now.
Yeah.
And it shifted me as a pastor. It shifted me the way I loved people. Cared for people, losing friends in ministry has shifted. And even my own church pains and hurts like has shifted the way that I pastor pastors and love them and care for them. And if you let it, suffering will do a good work.
Yeah.
But you
can't numb it.
You can't numb it. And it is I tell everybody this, it's a conscious decision. You're not going to, like when my daughter and they're like, hey, we have an ambulance coming. We don't know if she's going to make it. I wasn't like, oh God, you're so good right now.
No, thank gosh, you, no, something's wrong with you.
I'm a sociopath. Like, yeah. I remember walking by the nurse's station and I said out loud, which freaks people out, I wouldn't advise doing it in a hospital, God, whether she lives or dies, I'm with you. And it was a conscious decision.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that.
No.
It wasn't like, God's got this. I'm like, holy crap, my daughter may die. I'm with you. And I had to make it for myself.
Yeah.
And if you let it, suffering will do a good work, but it's a conscious choice you got to make of how you respond to it.
Yeah, that's good.
You know?
So one of the ways I always end this is just by going, okay, you've got, like, what I know mm-hmm. is that right now somebody's on the treadmill with their headphones in.
Yep.
Or it's 2 a.m. and they can't sleep.
Yep.
So they're in their office. And by, you know, for whatever random reason, this was off to the side
yep.
on their YouTube recommendations.
Yeah.
And now here they are. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're a pastor or maybe they're, maybe they're just
a person suffering
in it right now.
Yeah.
Just in it right now. What would you say to them? I mean, providentially, they stuck their headphones in.
Yeah.
And this is what they're
yeah.
listening to or watching right
yeah.
now. How would you encourage them?
Man, I think two things. God is always doing more than we think he is.
Yeah.
And the other one is don't go too far down the road. Yeah. And I mean, I still have to battle that.
Yeah.
Like the thing I wrestle with all the time is what happens to my daughter when I'm not here and my wife?
Yeah.
And if I go down that road,
yeah.
it is a dangerous road for me.
Yeah. Tomorrow's problems.
Tomorrow's problems.
That's right.
So what is, just don't go too far down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow in the mystery of the Lord, he is always doing more than we think he is. And whatever he is doing, it is for our good.
Yeah.
And that's hard to say. That is a hard, but that is something you, like, I have to beat that into my brain.
Yeah.
And I have to be able to look at things and always reframe them of going, okay, God, I don't like the way this looks. I don't understand this, but I know you are good.
Yeah.
So I hold on to that. Those are the two things, the man, that I have continued to beat in my brain over and over and over again. And then I think for me, not going too far down the road, I have a lot of really good friends, man, that yeah. God has blessed me with, brought into my life, that legitimately I feel like know everything about me.
Yeah.
And on my worst days, when I do go down those rabbit holes,
yeah.
that I can text and be like, yo, I need you to pray for me because right now I'm looking at investment accounts and how to do a Ponzi scheme to make more money to take care yeah. of my daughter when I'm gone. And I think that just sends you in a tailspin.
Yeah.
And I always have to remind myself, whatever I'm going through, whatever my daughter's going through, God loves her more than he loves me.
Yeah.
And whatever he's doing, it is for my good.
Yeah.
And just trust that. And even when you don't feel it.
Yeah. Choose to trust it.
Choose it. You choose to trust it.
Yeah. That's good.
Those are the two things.
Man, I want to say, like, especially if you are a pastor and you're watching this or listening to this right now, and you just have a sense like something's not right in me. I would encourage you to look into 1010.
Yep.
Go to your elders and go, hey, I think this could be really good for me as I think about the long game here. Like I feel almost consumed right now with finishing well.
Yeah.
Like I want to finish well. I feel like I owe it to the guys that the Lord sent into my life that finished well. And now I want to finish well. I want to finish this run. I'm well aware that I have an enemy who hates me. I'm well aware that I have certain bents and broken pieces in me that if not continually brought before the Lord, could be my undoing, that I would encourage you to look into 1010. And I mean, I don't work for them. I'm not doing anything for them. I'm not.
Not yet.
Not, this is not a commercial for 1010 where I'm getting kickbacks. Use code Matt Chandler 20 to, you know, save on the 1010 program.
There are no discounts.
Yeah, there are no codes. Okay. So man, brother, I just want to speak to you. The Lord might just have a deeper work to do in your soul that you didn't get when you were a younger man. That has left you susceptible to some things that I think right now you might not be able to name or know. Mm-hmm. And it's a good kind of use of time and money to go on that journey. So we'll put 1010 info in the show notes. And I would just encourage you to look at it. And if you're a fellow sufferer, man, you don't believe the lie that you're all alone in it. Yeah. This is a universal human experience. Instagram is make-believe. It is somebody's highlight reel. Not everyone is what you're seeing when you're doom scrolling every night. And so find a church that it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to suffer, and that doesn't try to put a theological bumper sticker on your sorrow, and will enter in to lament with you in this season and paint a picture of hope in the future that you can cling to. And so, man, thanks for dialing in to this episode of The Overcomers. Josh, so glad this worked
out. Thanks for having me.
Do it. Yeah. Love you, bud.
Thanks, man.
All right, we'll see you. Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The Overcomers. I just pray your heart is always encouraged in the Lord. Really, the ministry I feel God's called me to in this season is to be one that's encouraging you, telling you the Lord sees you, reminding you of the opportunities that we have as the people of God in this day. And so The Overcomers podcast is one of the ways I do that. Another way is that I'm sending out a monthly newsletter. And in that, I've got a little audio link for kind of things I'm thinking about and wrestling through that I'm not necessarily preaching on. And so in the show notes is a link where you can go and sign up for that monthly email. And so, man, if The Overcomers is encouraging you, I would encourage you then to click on that link, sign up for the newsletter. And it's a way for me to further encourage you as you seek to live as overcomers in this current moment. Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The Overcomers. I just pray your heart is always encouraged in the Lord. Really, the ministry I feel God's called me to in this season is to be one that's encouraging you, telling you the Lord sees you, reminding you of the opportunities that we have as the people of God in this day. And so The Overcomers podcast is one of the ways I do that. Another way is that I'm sending out a monthly newsletter. And in that, I've got a little audio link for kind of things I'm thinking about and wrestling through that I'm not necessarily preaching on. And so in the show notes is a link where you can go and sign up for that monthly email. And so, man, if The Overcomers is encouraging you, I would encourage you then to click on that link, sign up for the newsletter. And it's a way for me to further encourage you as you seek to live as overcomers in this current moment.